One's a former NFL star turned esports coach.
But I was getting the stink eye from my wife. She's like, what you doing? I'm like, nothing.
One might love his Switch more than his girlfriend.
Man, I hope she's not listening to this. Please.
And one's a dad who can't stop playing Rocket League.
These kids these days, they're like, blah, 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 blah. We're used to jump and run.
Together, they welcome you to Amon Green's Gamers Lounge.
What? Welcome to the Gamers Lounge. Doing some final edits there. Just looking at my screen. That's how things go here. Just some last minute adjustments, as always, here on the Gamers Lounge. So hope everyone's doing well and had a fantastic week. I know my week so far has been ultra busy. Super things. So welcome to the show. This is myself, got my man Ben, John, and our guest right there, Big Crick from the South. I say check in from last week. I'm also a part of this new show that is actually starting this week, and it's called it's produced by Amazon. It's called The Crown. It's called WTF, and it's not the WTF you think. It's called What the Fantasy. So it's going to be a video game / traditional sports show with myself as one of the hosts, along with somebody who you might know, might recognize, Aaron Ashley Simon, who has been getting in shoutcasting and hosting shows, was part of a show that was over on the Cheddar Network that just ended not too long ago, but now she's part of Xset. She's doing the big things. I believe she just signed a contract with Puma. So she's rising right now. And myself and her and another kid by the name of Ramsey Toms is going to be on there talking about video games, talking about traditional sports, and just mixing it all up, you know. And I know you think about, when you hear a sports show, you think about SportsCenter, like, you know, ESPN and all that. This is going to be a little bit more fun, a little bit more different, definitely different, and a little bit, I'll say, a lot more interactive for people, because it's Twitch. You know, we have the Twitch chat. We got to make sure people are engaged. So we're going to be making sure all of that is happening. So I've been rehearsing, setting up. I've become a cameraman, guys. they sent me these two big boxes of camera equipment, lights, a computer, and all this I do now, it doesn't even scare me no more. What scared me was opening them boxes, and I was like, I'm pulling stuff out like, what is this? Oh, I think that's a camera. Put that down. How many power blocks do I need? It's like 12 power blocks they sent me, you know, for all the plugins and the wires. It's crazy. So, Ben, so what's been up with you in the last week?
For me, for the last week, you talked about that TV show that you're now a part of. Hopefully you don't go Hollywood on us, but you also have an event in LA this week, virtually, of course, but Think LA event where you're going to be hooking up with the head of gaming for Twitch, Bill Young, and kind of talking about where the gaming industry is at now, coming out of the pandemic and everything, you know, how did habits change with gaming and stuff like that. So I'm looking forward to that event you're doing on Thursday. Now, it is a closed event, but hopefully we can post up some recaps to our either Twitter accounts or Instagram accounts. So, yeah, looking forward to that and helping you get organized for that event as well.
John, what you got cracking?
Well, you and I were playing on, was it Saturday night?
Oh, yeah. I almost forgot about that. Rocket League again.
Yeah, we're playing some Rocket League again. Ben, you missed out again, man. We're out flipping and scoring goals.
Guys, I'm young. It's Saturday night. I'm doing stuff.
Okay? I'm young.
Are we doing the old man stuff, I guess, John? We're old.
Yeah, we're the old 40. Man stuff.
We're in our 40s, so we're Rocket Leaguing. He's out there, the animal housing it up.
Yeah, and I'll be talking about Rocket League later on in our game releases. They've got a new season coming out. But do you guys know what day it is today?
Other than Wednesday, April 7th?
Yeah. National Beer Day!
He stole it from me. National Beer Day! It is today. So, yes. So I just wanted to say that because I think we should all celebrate with like a beer after the show or something.
So that's our free pass to get drunk on a Wednesday, right?
Yeah, drink responsibly, but yes.
Yeah. Hey, and so I like to bring in, I'll say, hot rapper from the South, dropping big tracks. And he's also a gamer, everybody. So you know this. He's also a gamer. My man, Big Crick, what's up, dog? How you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm blessed, man. You know, just came off of Twitch yesterday gaming with you. So, you know, I'm serious about it, you know.
Was that your first time in a long time, or when was it?
I've been on Twitch before, but not that often, not that crazy, man. So, for me, it was like, it's always trying to get back in the rhythm. And like you said, how you comfortable in your setup now? Like, I'm not comfortable, per se, just yet. And so, it's like just trying to get out of my comfort zone and realizing it's okay for me to be competitive. Yeah, you see me, I like it get under my skin, we get losing, bro. So for me, it was just like just trying to be okay with the fact that I might not win every game and people actually physically see me lose, and it's all good, you know?
All right, so I was watching the stream last night of you guys playing Call of Duty. I pulled some highlights, which made me laugh when I'm watching it, because you guys are entertaining, right? So let's take, I've got two cuts for you guys to listen to. First one is Amon and Big Crit streaming here, and then this happens.
Just keep it looking the wrong direction.
Yep. God, he hit me. I think this guy killed me like three times already. He is taking me out right now.
Who just shot me through the window? Yo, South Texas, bro, you gotta get it together, bro.
South Texas is one of our teammates.
He killed me so many times. Like, he had the most kills the entire game, though, which kind of threw me off. Like, I couldn't understand how he was killing me and other people. But he was. Like, he's at the top of the leaderboard like twice. I get it to him.
This one made me laugh when Amon accidentally took out.
You know somebody coming up these steps. Oh my god, bro! You killed me with your grenade.
Oh my bad. I thought that was the guy coming up. My bad.
Nah, he was coming up, but he wasn't quite up the steps yet.
Oh dang it! My bad.
Nah, it's all good.
Hey, what had happened was I hadn't played Modern Warfare in a while. I haven't played Hardcore in a while because we did Domination Hardcore and Domination Teeth Deathmatch, and so I was just getting reacclimated to that. I played them before, just hadn't in a while. I've been on Black Ops. And so that friendly fire part, I reminded myself real quick, because not only did I take Crick out, I took out...
It was a few other people.
Three, four other teammates. They were mad at me. They were hunting me down.
They started killing him and getting kicked. But so the thing is too, man, you're team based, and I respect it, because you might not have the most kills, but you got the most captures.
Right.
And that's kind of the whole reason we was winning. Everybody else was really going for the most kills, man. And I think a lot of the people that had joined from the chat, that's what they was trying to showcase. They didn't kill by a capture no flag, bro. So, you know, and then there was that one person with the afro, like the second to last game, that was going crazy.
It was like unconscious on us.
It was rough, man. It was rough, you know. But I enjoyed it, though, bro, the competitive nature. I think being on your Twitch stream is like so many people like want to run with me now. Like, right. Last night I was still getting invites, but that was dope, bro.
Okay, yeah, man, no problem, man. Yeah. It was just fun to have you on there and to bring that game. That's that part of where you don't realize you're playing with somebody that you know that's brand new. You just get into that game and have focus. And for me and my game, in terms of the objective, that's what I teach my players. So I'm like, at the worst case, if I know I'm not going to win the gunfight, let me just get to an objective when we're doing domination and get the points, hold it down. Then get ready for if it's hard point, get ready for the whole rotation. Yeah. But it was just dom. So you got to make sure you know that part. I say, don't worry about kills. Get the objective. That's what you have to.
So do y'all? So when y'all are playing, are there certain boards that y'all don't play on, like Shipment? Because Shipment, so y'all don't have to play on that board when it comes to competitive.
No.
Okay, bro. Because that was I just gave up at one point, bro. I died 74 times, bro. 74 times as a cat had 99 kills that last time on Shipment, bro. It was too much, bro.
I was right behind you. I had that many same amount of kills. I mean, I think I got killed 79 times by somebody.
Yeah.
By pretty much everybody on the map on Shipment. Yeah. It was a nightmare.
It was disturbing, bro. It was disturbing. Yeah.
Big B from the Twitch chat says 50% of his deaths last night were from you, and he says he was on your team.
I told you. I was taking my teammates out. It was a mistake. I'm sorry, Big B. I'm sorry. I think I hit South Texas. I hit you a couple times. My apologies. It wasn't personal.
The speed of the game is like, because I haven't played Call of Duty in a while. I know I'm on 2K, but once you don't play it and you get back into it, the speed of it is so quick that you can just get scared and just like, you got to shoot whoever it is. Like, you know, so, but nah, man, it was funny though. Definitely the amount of team kills that happened last night though.
And then that's what I was saying to Ben and John before you jumped in the Zoom here. It was like some of my kills early were reflex. I just saw, you know, when you see people running at you fast, it's just bow. You're like, you're like, okay.
I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. You tried to apologize. I tried to apologize. Our teammates were cussing me. If you heard them in my ears, my headset, they were giving it to me. What's wrong with you, Batman? I'm like, chill. I'm like, hey, man, I'm sorry. Look, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to headshot you. Yeah. That was a mistake. It was just a reaction. Just so you know that. So, so I know we played Call of Duty last night. So what is one? I know that's one of your favorites, but what is your favorite game to play?
I mean, obviously, 2K is run my life a lot. Years and years of building characters, and like I got 9 characters right now. You know, I got 2 2-way score machines, 2 playmaking paint beasts. Like I got a inside out score at point guard. Yeah, bro. But it's like the competitive nature of it because we run a lot of pro-am rec, and then now you got private matching. Then everybody think they 5 is the best 5. And so I love going in there and they feel like, oh, I'm just supposed to be rapping and I'm actually cold with it. And I like guarding the cheese people that like to do the Steph Curry slide with the 3-pointer. I'm all for that. I got all my badges. And yeah, I ain't playing, man. I ain't playing. I'm a lockdown, 100%.
Okay. Yeah.
You know? Aside from that, Mortal Kombat, Apex, like I really dig Apex a lot, man. It took me a while to get into that game. But it's just so it's fun and you getting killed at the same time. Call of Duty sometimes just make you feel like overwhelmed. So
yeah,
it's a lot. It's you exploding and all kinds of stuff, you know. But Apex is a little bit more colorful, a little bit more on the lighthearted side of first person shooters.
Where do you find the time, Crit, to obviously do what you do, rapping and in the music world, but then also to put in the grind of gaming and to get good at these games? Like, what's that balancing act like?
So the thing is, like, by gaming, so normally when I'm making beats, I'm working on production, I can, like, really just turn around and start gaming then. And so what it does is keep me in the studio. Mm-hmm. But at some point, if I run into, like, a roadblock with the beat or I get the hook done and I don't feel like writing a verse in the moment, you know, I just turn over, grind on, you know, work with my character, play a few Apex rounds, and then I get a little clarity and I go back and I finish the song. But the key is to never leave the studio so I can really complete whatever I'm working on at the same time. And that can be whatever hour in the night. But I don't know, it just keeps me in the studio. And it's been like that for years, man, where the gaming console is literally right next to where I make my beats. And I get busy. And so it just, that's how I've been able to do it, man. And a lot of my mixtapes have come from me spending hours in the studio gaming and working.
How much time and how important is that studio being there, like you just said, and how much time are you there, you know, throughout your time making an album?
I just started really going to a studio outside of being in the home studio, just because it's good to like be able to hear the music I make in a different environment. Obviously, you're going to get a different kind of criticism when it's, you know, your friends around and people can see you kind of working in the moment. But man, I at any rate, man, I can spend like 11, 12 hours just working on music or just listening to like vinyl records or drum kits and stuff like that, just to kind of get a new vibe, a new feel. And I've always been self-contained because I can produce. I do write my own music and I recorded all of my first mixtapes. I don't necessarily need anybody to create an entire body of music. And so when it comes time to like do mixing and stuff, I definitely lean on people with a better ear. But bro, you can put me in the studio by myself and I'll come out with an album.
That's so cool. All right. Yeah. So when you're writing, do you ever think of a line or two and like at an off time, and do you have like some special file in your phone? Like, are you always just like randomly thinking like, oh, I got to write that down before I forget it?
No, actually.
No.
I used to. Okay. I used to with hooks. With hooks, that's different. Like my voice note, it's full of me randomly singing out of key half the time, probably, but I know the hook is going to be dope, right? Yeah. But as far as the verses, I've got to a point where I literally type my verses out as I'm writing them, because it's something about when I used to write on pen and pad, it's like when you scratch it out, it's almost like whatever the idea will come up next, it takes you a little bit of time because you're messing up the paper, you got to get a new one. But me, it's like literally I'm on my Mac and I just start writing, I kind of let it flow. And then if I run into a roadblock, I do this, it's like an old school trick that singers used to do. I basically just kind of mumble my way through, find the melody or the flow I want, and then I go back and then write what I feel like I was trying to say.
Okay.
And then it's kind of a freestyle, natural way of creating. And I know a lot of R&B soul people used to do that back in the day too. So.
Mm. I like that. So with that motivation, what got you into just in that industry, into rapping, into the music world?
I started writing poetry when I was young. And my sixth grade teacher had kind of reminded me that Tupac, a lot of his music, was poems. And then it was written normally in poem form. And behind the instrumental, he was able to create a song out of it. And that kind of gave me the confidence to start turning a lot of my poetry into actual records. And then I was producing my records back then on MTV Music Generator. It came out on PlayStation. It was like the first beat machine that was digital on like a video game console.
And yeah, I remember that.
If you can make a beat on that, bro, you can make a beat on anything. Because most memory cards only held like 25 megabytes. So if you sample 4 seconds of a song, you pretty much done hit that already. So yeah. I had like 12 memory cards trying to sample Bobby Womack here and there, and my drum loops was trash, but I was like 13 years old, and right. That's how I started, and then I would apply my verses, and it just became this thing where, even though it wasn't good, it was a way for me to express myself and talk about what I was dealing with emotionally when it wasn't easy for me to actually verbalize it, but in the music, people would listen to it.
Right.
Whether it was good or not, and then they would give you criticism, and some of it would be just straight up, bro, you whack. And then some of right. them, like, hey man, I hear you on to something with this, and that you should just kind of keep going. And there was a time where I was totally not in my lane of rapping. I was just rapping about what everybody else is rapping. And this one OG cat on my block told me, look, you 15 years old, man, rap about what you know as a 15-year-old. Stop trying to rap what you hear everybody else do. And that was kind of the beginning of me finding that transparency I needed to just grow as an artist and to talk about what I know and then hope people can relate to it. And it's worked wonders for me, man.
Well, too, I think it's important to note what he just said, too, just being authentic, being you and writing things that, you know, firsthand experiences, whatever it may be, because people can really relate to that when it comes to music.
Yeah. There's a thing about music where there's a superhero aspect to it, right, where you can write this glamorous aspect of yourself. But when people see you out and about, they're going to know. How are they going to see that you're not going to feel like that all the time or every day? No one necessarily does. Mm-hmm. And so by being yourself, people, the approach is more human and not this facade or this grandiose thing you created. And then you got to keep up that persona all the time. And so I was blessed to just kind of stick to my roots and talk about whatever I was dealing with emotionally or whether my highs or lows, the ups and downs. And those things made it to me easily approachable. And then it created this bond that I have with people when we get to talking about music because they know I can relate and vice versa.
Right. Okay, so I have a question about beats.
Yes.
For someone who's just messed around like on GarageBand, right? Like the skill set to make beats to me is fascinating because I try to do that and I don't know what I'm supposed to be listening to. Like, how do you like I got to listen to this part of it, but then that part of it, and I don't know how to put something together. How do you hear, like, when you think of a beat or when you put it together, like, where does that come from?
Okay, so my grandmother and my thank God my parents as well played a lot of old school music around me, a lot of soul music, just introduced me to a lot of things. And so my mind frame was like, what makes them like this song so much? Or back in the day, why are these the top 10 songs on radio, right? And okay, Dr. Dre is the groundbreaking producer because of his drums and his snares, or 3-6 Mafia and the way they sample and the triplet hi-hats and the kicks and the snares, or Lil Jon and the 808. And it was just trying to figure out, okay, if these components make for good hip-hop records, then I have to figure out what I can take from those and then kind of curate and create my own sound as well, right? Mm-hmm. Because obviously this is working.
Right.
And seeing an Outkast, seeing Neptunes create or Organized Noise, they were creating just whatever they wanted to create and it'll be a hit record because they were so authentic to their sound and what they were doing that every record they did was just, it was just them. And so I think that's kind of how I started to approach music, is that I know I love the sample, but that means I love soul music. So that means I love a certain kind of melodic rhythm. I love live instrumentation. So I obviously am drawn to that. So I try to put that in my music as possible. I love funk and Parliament. So move bass lines and synths move me. So if I get the right synth pad, the right move, I know how to keep running with it. Kicks and snares. I love 808 snares. I've listened to enough bounce music to know exactly how that should rock. And then just kind of curate from there. And then I also was in band, man. I played the cello from fifth to seventh grade, and I played the tuba from fifth throughout high school. So I have an understanding of bass. That's why I love it so much. And just trying to make sure it's jamming. And my grandmother was my first A&R. If I could make her dance to a song, then it's the one.
Yeah.
Regardless if I'm cussing or not. She's like, baby, I don't know why you got to say all them words, but I like the beat.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that, too, because I think I read an article about how you said it was so important that you learn how to read sheet music as a child, and that really helped you with everything else, you know, down the road.
Yeah, I mean, I mind you, I don't know how to read it now. It definitely helped me back then with just kind of understanding certain musical instruments, you know, and how they kind of flow. Barry White was one of those people that I learned. He pretty much wrote all the music.
Ooh, that voice, man.
Oh, right? Yeah, and so Love Unlimited and how grand it sounded. You know, I wanted to be able to make music like that. And then once you sample so much, you realize that they created those records, and those records was already massive hits, and they had put all the ideas that they could in those songs. And I do my best to, if I do sample, I do my best not to ruin whatever they created. But now I'm at a place where I want to make something that doesn't have a sample, and I don't sample, somebody can sample me. And so that's where I'm at now, kind of challenging myself to sit there and hum it with some musicians, or, you know, play through it until it sounds like I need to sound what I have to take from somebody else's idea as well.
So the name, Big Crit. How did you come up with it? And give us the definition.
Okay, so the meaning of it. It used to be critical, right? But it was critical, but it was spelled with K's. And so the enunciation of that was difficult when I go to battles, because they still call me critical, or they just kind of botch it up. And so I'm like, nah, just, you know, I showed it to Crit. Issue with that is, in the beginning, nobody knew what that meant. And so I had to come up with an acronym, and it stands for King, Remembered in Time. And it's a humble way of saying that I'm going to be a king, you know, at the end of my career. And I don't know when that might be, but I can't become complacent. And it'll kind of be up to people to kind of give me that crown in itself throughout all the music and work that I do. And I just threw the big on there, because from the South, either you a young, little, slim, or big, you know what I'm saying? And so it was just my due to the old school way of the South.
Yeah, that's everybody. You're from, I think, New Orleans started with Lil Wayne and Lil Baby, all of them. And then,
well, Outkast too, right? Big Boy?
Big Boy. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I know, like myself with football, you know, with traditional sports and football, you know, I look at it, you know, the running backs before me. Mm-hmm. So coming, you know, you were Mississippi, but then you went over to Atlanta, moved there. Okay. So what was those rappers that you was like, okay, I'm not trying to be like them, but I like what they're doing to motivate me to where I'm at, where I want to go?
UGK, you know, obviously they were from Port Arthur, small town outside of Texas, just like I'm from a small town from Mississippi. Player Fly, Gangsta Black, 3-6 Mafia, obviously Outkast, Goody Mob, Attic Crew. So that was like Young Bloods, David Banner. You know what I'm saying? It's an obvious one as well. But these are like the people that I really watched. And I watched David Banner a lot, because he had to play more than one position in order to leave Mississippi. He had to produce and he had to rap. Yeah, and I think being able to both put him in a position to be able to travel and work with artists without the competitive nature of always having to spit a verse. So he was able to get in the rooms, prove himself in the production part, and then murder the beat once they was like, yeah, go on, rap on that. And so by knowing that, when I moved to Atlanta, before people knew I could rap, I was, you know, selling beats. And then they'd be like, man, who that is on the hook? And I'd be like, that's me. It's like, oh, you rap too? I'm like, yeah. And then it gave me an opportunity to play them, you know, my records, and then prove myself in that perspective. Because other than that, if they was like, bro, where you from? I'm like, I'm from Mississippi. They'd be like, we don't want to hear that. You know what I'm saying? It's already this assumption that I wasn't going to be jammed. So the beats got me in the door first, and then I could kind of go from there. Like, nah, check my records out.
Yeah. It sounds like some conversations I had with when I was going on my recruiting trips.
Yeah.
And, you know, football players, California, from the South, Texas, Florida. Yeah. They're like, where are you from, Amon? Oh, I'm from Omaha, Nebraska. Omaha? You're a running back from Nebraska? What? I'm getting that. Trust me. I know the feeling. It's a crazy look.
And they don't know you fire with it, though. You're like, oh, okay.
Yeah, I'd be like, they'd be like, it's black people in Omaha? I'd be like, yeah, bro, come on now.
For me, they was like, it's buildings in Meridian?
Wow. Wow.
City, bro. It's like, ain't nothing like doing an interview with somebody like, bro, how does it feel to be in a city? And I'm like, what do you mean? Like, I'm from a city. I mean, I'm country, but I'm from a city, Meridian, Mississippi. Like, and then, so that just started me on this whole thing of wanting people to come see where I was from so they see it's nothing like you think or what you've seen on television.
So obviously, that's where the inspiration for country, you know, country, I'll say it.
Okay, oh, well, I ain't know what you could, man. I've been trying that.
No, I know, but that's in the title. That's in the name of the title, you know.
You have to.
Yeah, gotta say it. Gotta say it. Doesn't sound right. So that song, some of the guys you just mentioned, you were able to work with them in there. Ludacris being one, Bun B. So how was that being one of your first big singles?
Oh, man, it was crazy because I dropped that record around 2010. And so I had ran into Bun B at this spot called DD172 in New York. And it was like mind blowing because, you know, Bun B is like this legend, larger than life person in the South. I always wanted to see him in Pimp C perform, and I'm just in DD172, and Bun B just casually, real player, like just walk in the building. And I'm like, yo, right? And he was familiar with me, and I was like, OG, if I could get you on this record called Country, I would appreciate it. Like, if you could, and he was like, bet. And I was thrown off. I was like, bit like, yeah, like, yeah, I do it. I was like, oh. And then, you know, from that point, it was, we reached out to Ludacris through Shaka Zulu and Jeff. Shout out to them because I knew them at the time. And then being able to get him on the record because he rocked with the song. And it was just like this organic thing. And everybody just pulled up to the video shoot with the ease. And Bun B gave me some real advice because I only had one of the shirt looks that I had. And I was sweating real bad because I was nervous. So I was having me some drinks. So I was in the RV. I was sweating. Bun B walked up and said, so look, youngin, always make sure you have two of the same shirts because it's hot out there and I can tell you drinking and you're going to sweat that out. and he just walked away clean on me. And I was like, damn, man, I'm a little crazy at the collar. You know what I'm saying? But nah, that was like a 3-day shoot. They shot Bun B and his part in Texas. And we shot me, Bun, and Luda in Atlanta, and then went on down to Mississippi and shot with our Motion Family. And that was a great time in my career, and it was the beginning. And it definitely set a precedent for me. And it was amazing, man. We still, when we perform that, it go up every time.
Yeah.
Even in New York, I perform it. L.A., I'm performing. Don't matter, and it go up. Everybody in there talking about country.
Yep.
That music video is awesome too, as you just laid out. I watched it this morning for like it's good. It's
really thank you, bro. Yeah, that was like the last time you see a 3-day shoot for real. Like it kind of, you know, yeah, it ain't like that no more. Yeah.
You were three different places though. That's why, right?
Yeah. Well, I didn't go to Texas. They shot Bun. They flew out to shoot Bun in Texas. They shot me in Atlanta, and then we flew to Mississippi and shot.
Okay.
And that was like, yeah, that was it. They don't do that. It's hard pressed to get a 3-day shoot now. Maybe 8 hours.
Is that how quick it is? Yeah. That's how quick it is? 8 hours?
Maybe 8 or 9 hours now. Yeah. Depending on, I mean, because the budgets have changed and then the visuals have changed, right? And then the product and even what people decide to shoot. And if you're in Atlanta, man, you can find pretty much every location. I mean, that might be another thing too. People have gotten really creative with finding locations that feel like places that they aren't at. You know what I'm saying? So,
man,
for time purposes and obviously safety because of COVID, you can't, you know, it's kind of difficult to shoot like that.
Right.
And in that budget.
And then technology too.
Yeah, well, technology with that budget, man. Let me tell you.
Yeah,
that country record, it costs. That video costs now.
Oh yeah. the finance side, that's that money. Yeah.
That was all on Def Jam though, right?
Yeah, that was on Def Jam back then. Yeah. I'm not on Def Jam anymore though.
Nope.
You're on your own label.
Multi to the sun die. You cannot sign me. You have to partner with my label.
Ooh. Mm-hmm. Now how's that feel?
Yeah, you're in control.
It's beautiful, and it's also a sense of freedom because I don't have to like create an album and then go play it for a boardroom, right? Mm. I don't have to really. Deadlines are still important, but it's really for us wanting to roll out that we want. But if I don't make the deadline per se, it's not like the end of the world. Like, my album's not going to get shelved. Like, it's just, okay, we just reconfigure things, and then we figure out when the when it's clear, when I'm clear for takeoff. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, man, it was like a grueling thing when you're with a label and they don't really understand where you're coming from. And that was right before streaming kind of started. So they didn't understand, if people weren't on IG, that doesn't mean they weren't buying your album. Or if they weren't on social media, like, they still were there trying to buy your album. It just had to be in stores. And so it was a time I learned a lot, but I was still branding Multi at the same time. So I was aware that even if I leave Def Jam, I'm still going to make sure my brand is out there. And it worked out for me, boss. I can't complain.
At the start of this podcast, you're talking about how competitive you are at video games, right? How competitive is your industry? Like, can you put it into terms of just from people, like, when you were first starting trying to get in to when you're established? Like, I can't believe, I can only imagine how competitive it is.
So the beginning of the competitive nature can be, I would consider it healthy in the beginning, right? It's like this, you're going to go out there, you're going to prove yourself no matter what, and you're going to make sure you heard. And every verse you kick is going to be like, I'm going to body this artist, and I'm going to go get this award, and I'm going to make them respect me. That, over time, can turn into a bitterness if people don't think you bodied the record, if you don't get the awards and the accolades, if people still aren't giving you the opportunity that you think you deserve, and you see somebody else getting that opportunity. And so over time, I had to really kind of get to a point I just competed with myself and my previous projects and not really with my peers, because I didn't want to. And I went through this process where I became angry, as if, oh, man, they ain't giving me this opportunity, ain't giving me this shot. But I had to realize maybe God doesn't want me to have that kind of opportunity, or maybe that I'm not going to thrive well in this kind of music, or maybe my music isn't meant for people in the club all the time. Like, they'll play my music when they driving home from work or when they've had a long day. Just coming to grips with that and being accepting of this is where I belong, and just being happy for everybody wherever they're at. Because I don't know what another artist went through to get that award or to deal with that label or to get that opportunity. And so it's just that you toddle that line of using it as fuel and trying not to let it kind of bog you down and put you in a bitter state or a depressed state. Because when you compete, it will take you there if you're not winning and you know you're giving your all.
How did you realize that? Like, it's okay. I mean, because I'm sure not only in your industry, but somebody who might be listening to this in whatever career path they've chosen, they might draw some parallels to that. So how did you realize not to become bitter?
I think it started when I go back and listen to some of my albums, right? Live from the Underground, I sounded very angry sometimes that people didn't understand that I was country, or that I didn't feel like I was getting a fair shake or shot. And some of those interviews, I sounded frustrated. And then it was like, well, how did my tour go? The people that found my music, did they enjoy it? When people go back, how do they feel about it? And so it was like, I was still getting all these amazing opportunities and things were happening around me, but I was so focused on what somebody else had and comparing. And that's where I went wrong. Like, whatever comes your way and whatever opportunities come your way, they were meant for you. And it's about how you kind of, what you use that stepping stone towards the next thing. After I dropped this record called Mount Olympus, which probably is my most angriest record, even that record, it hit a brick wall towards people that claim they wanted to see me more lyrical or claim that they wanted to see a good battle. And I saw then that it wasn't so much about the competitive nature I had. Mm-hmm. It was about, they are fans of this person. They're not a supporter of mine. And there's no record I'm going to do that's going to change how much they love this person's music. And so I should focus on the people that rock with my music. And then maybe in time, this person will come on over here. But if they don't, it's cool. And that's really what happened. It's like, man, everybody's not going to like my music. I'm not going to be the, if this person's in LA and I'm from Mississippi, the things that I'm talking about, they might not resonate with them. So it's just for their favorite artist to be from where they're from. And so I just had to come to that grips, and it's geography lottery. Nobody can plan or nobody can predict where they're going to be born. Right. And so from that, I had to understand, man, I'm from Meridian, Mississippi. I'm going to tell my story to the best of my abilities, and wherever that takes me is like, it's still a blessing, you know? So, but I can understand the team thing, right? Cause if we don't get nominated for certain things or certain opportunities passes by, I'm the kind of person that I apologize to my team, because I know how hard they worked and promoted and, you know, was there with me when we was listening to these songs over and over again. And all the times I had to play them the track undid and they had to listen to it and hope that they could get the idea. And I'm like, you don't hear how jam this is. And they're like, bro, what? Like, it ain't finished, you know? Right. So, yeah, definitely. But and I understand like the getting down on yourself aspect too, because you not only do you want to win, but you want to make it, you want to win for everyone else that's around you too, right? And you want to be able to bring that win back home so we all can celebrate. And I got to a point that a lot of people wanted to see me at a certain level, and I just had to tell them, like, look, if we make it there, we're going to all celebrate. But if not, I'm still going to serve this music, and I'm still going to get his quality, and we still going to ride clean and bust our speakers. So it's love, you know?
Which song could you listen to on repeat over and over and not really get bored with it? Is there a song out there? Like, do you have a favorite song?
Yeah, I got three.
Okay.
I got three songs. I got Liberation. Liberation by Outkast, Across 110th Street by Bobby Womack, and Take Care of Mama by Willie Hutch.
Ooh. Now, Willie, I think Willie Hutch and the other name you said, that's old school. That's not rap.
Is Bobby
it?
Womack.
That's like R&B.
Yeah. That's soul.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and then you said repeat, and they'll get tired of it. So, yes. These are the records that I, Across 110th Street, I listened to that. So I know I drove my father crazy because I was every bit of 13, 14 years old and all this blaring out of my room is Across 110th Street. And he's probably like, what is wrong with this kid? Like, you know what I'm saying? It's mad bone thugs and harmony and it's like so much other music I could be listening to. And that's what I was blaring at the time. But it was something about the storytelling. And I had never been to Harlem, but the way he was telling his story was just so compelling. And it talked about everything and even stuff that I'd seen in my city. And I couldn't stop listening to it.
Yeah, that old school stuff that's where a lot of the melodies come from, a lot of the bass line, and even some of the hooks.
Because
I grew up, my stepdad was from New Orleans. And so he brought in a lot of jazz, a lot of R&B. He actually sang background for the Neville Brothers. And so,
seriously. Wow. Well, y'all didn't know that either.
Yeah, no. He had a deep voice. My stepdad was 6'5". He went to St. Augustine High School, played offensive lineman, and hurt his knee. And that's how he got into the music world, because he hurt his knee. But he told me that. And I was just a kid, you know, learning. He put on that album for the Neville Brothers. And I'm listening to Aaron Neville and his, you know,
yeah,
had the big Native American Chiefs on the cover.
Yeah.
And I'm just I remember going to football practice, listening to Neville Brothers, John Coltrane, Miles Davis, you know, and I come to practice chill. You know, I didn't know why I was so chill, but I got it now. I'm like, listening to Miles Davis going to football practice will chill you out. And I was able, and I actually practiced better because I was like,
I'm about to say, do you think the sporadicness and the way jazz music is helped you run?
Yeah, probably so. Because people would say, man, hey, man, Amon, you run so smooth. You know, you make the moves and you just look like you just gliding out there. And I'm like, I couldn't really reference it until I got here in the league where I was like, man, it's maybe, you know what? It was all them football practices, baseball practices, listening to Miles Davis, listening to John Coltrane, listening to the Neville Brothers, going to practice. And I'm sitting there 8, 9, 10 years old, just kind of like falling asleep. Like, are we here at practice? And I'm like, I'm ready to go, but didn't realize that kind of, you know, effect, you know, was a good effect, you know, and listening to your stuff too. Addiction. I love that song.
Hey, the song
I like that a lot. It's a chill song, but it has that. It's an in between chill and like upbeat at the same time.
That juxtaposition, man.
It
don't get in the way. I love making the kind of music where you can play it, you can clean up to it, you can go to the club to it, you can take a long drive somewhere to it, and you kicking. It don't get in the way.
Yeah, like my gamers say, they like the vibe. That's one of them vibe songs right there. When they're hey, you can't be vibing when you're trying to win now.
Not Call of Duty. You better be super aggressive. Scarface, you better be on one. Straight up.
So if we could talk about it, what is up next for Big?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of music coming out in like in the next few months, man. And I got another album coming out, obviously, probably more than one. And I'm just real mysterious with mine, bro. Like the old school days are just not giving people too much until it's time for the rollout, but it's a large amount of music, bro. Like a ridiculous amount of music I'm dropping, and I'm excited because people are going to be able to hear the growth creatively with me. I think 2020 was an eye-opener to everybody. Mm-hmm. So for me, even musically, it's trying to find a musical space that just sounds, well, people already could have seen I was going there. It's a little different for me. It's a different kind of way I've attacked music and creating it. And it kind of trying to turn my voice more into an instrument instead of just ABAB rap, right? So I'm excited for people to hear, man. And it's a very interesting story behind all the music, too. So I think people are going to really enjoy this. And it's nothing like any of my other music.
That's what I like. And is that something you picked up from Outkast or just something that you're going to do on your own?
I would have to say that Outkast definitely showed me, when I would say just the overall Outkast and like Goody Mob and how they were able to kind of transform musically and how was and CeeLo. So I definitely would have to give a due to how they went from being just hardcore rappers to be able to go totally different. But for me, it's just like people have heard me rap and they know I can get busy. But it's kind of like, well, what else can I do creatively? And even if I do decide to rap, how can I kind of change that format? Does it always have to be hook, verse, you know what I'm saying? I can do whatever I want. And then how can I let the music kind of guide me through it instead of it always, it's the other way around.
Right.
So we're going to see. Yeah. I'm excited to be here. Either they're going to like it, or either they're going to love it or hate it, bro. There ain't no in between.
And they're going to let you know, too.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Man. That's part of the business.
I've gotten used to that now, but even in my mind, it's like they might not like it. Like if you're in your mid-20s, you might not be in the space to like it. But I guarantee when you get older, you're gonna find one of these records that's gonna resonate with you. You know, and so that's what the whole deal is. You might not be in the space for it right now, but trust me, as you get older, I got one for you. I definitely got one for you.
What's some advice you will give to a musician or somebody tuning in now that's, you know, early in their career and trying to be successful? What would be some advice you would give to them?
If you're a producer, find an artist to work with. If you're an artist, find a producer to work with. That's the easiest tandem that I could think of in order to really get your music out there. Because if y'all both jamming, one of y'all going to probably take off first. Either it's going to be the artist or is it going to be the producer. And then once that person solidifies themselves, they can then bring the other one along. If you look at a Timbaland, Missy Elliott, you know what I'm saying? Like tandem, you can say YG, Mustard, Future, Metro Boomin, you know what I'm saying? Like, or Organized Noise, or Outkast. Like it works well. And then y'all have y'all own cohesive sound and relationship. So when it comes to making music, it won't always be business first, because that can definitely dampen a creative process. Pay your taxes. Whenever you do sign a deal, you understand that this is money for you to live off of as you work on your album, not necessarily money for you to go buy the most expensive things that you see, because you're going to be in the red for starters. Streaming is a really interesting game. It's not like physical copy sales that I was accustomed to or grew up in. So you really don't know how those algorithms may work in your favor when it comes to you actually seeing your royalties back in full. And obviously keeping the people that you started with around you are people that are positive and they keep it real with you. And yeah, man, make sure you keep your paperwork in order, you know, at all times, man, because at some point it's going to be very important that you can go back and show that you did this and this is what you signed and you should be getting paid off this, and all that is very transparent for you. Ask your lawyer important questions, have them break things down for you. Don't just you sign it because they say it's Gucci, because you need to know some of this rhetoric. You need to understand what's in front of you. So if it turns out bad, you're not going to just be like, oh, well, they put it in front of me. You know what you signed, and then you can change that or just not do anything like that later on in your career. Learn from all the other mistakes you've seen other artists make, because they obviously don't mind telling you. And ask, man, talk to your OGs, because they're going to give you the rundown on what they did wrong, because they don't want you to go through.
So where can everybody find you on social, on Instagram, Twitter, website? Because I know you got a website.
Yeah. So
where can we find you?
It's all Big Crit. It's all BIGKRIT. That's the handle for my IG. That's the handle for, it's WWE.com, BIGKRIT. That's the handle for Facebook. If you're trying to get at me on the game, you know what I'm saying, is This Is Krizzle. It's T-H-I-S-I-Z-K-R-I-Z-Z-L-E. I am handing out L's over here for whoever wants them. I'm with it, man. I ain't playing around.
All right, so we're going to jump into this next segment. John, can you take us to this or that, please?
This or that.
Okay, time for this or that, Big Crit. And this is all from the mind of Amon Green. So if anything gets diabolical, it's all because of Amon, all right?
Okay.
All right, so he kind of gave you a little bit of a preview at the start of the podcast. But our first this or that for this week, would you rather have a pet kangaroo or a pet koala?
I think a pet kangaroo, boss.
So is this question, would you rather have one as a pet or which one would you rather pet?
No, have as a pet.
Like it's in the house,
domesticated.
Hey, dog, look, imagine your people, like some folks just pull up at your crib and it's a kangaroo kissing it, bro. look, you just imagine the faces, the fear, the shock. And I'm just like, you know, something like that, like on some protective nature stuff, man. Like, I just think ain't nobody going to. And then imagine you could take it places. Like, imagine you can take your kangaroo place. Like, I pull up at the gaming spot, access replay with a kangaroo, bro.
People won't know what to say.
Yeah, he's and that's, hey, I mean, you know, koala is like, oh, you know, because that is like, is it real? Like,
can I pet it? Can I pet it?
You know what I'm saying? Like, that's the kind of intimidation I want at a gaming, like, competition. I want a kangaroo behind me. Imagine you in the club and your kangaroo with you. It's down for the cause, man.
Yeah.
See, I'm going to go in a different direction. I'm going to go koala bears because they look cute and cuddly. So I think some good-looking ladies are going to want to come and see this koala bear. So I'm going koala.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but then they're just going to pet the koala and walk away.
Oh, come on now. That's when I turn on the charm.
There's no real security there. All they know is they come over my crib, it's a kangaroo in here, regardless if something goes down. Like people boxing, you know what I'm saying? Me and this kangaroo, we with it.
Oh man, this is tough. Amon, I'm gonna go with koala because of what Ben said, because then that's the icebreaker. I'm afraid of kangaroos, Big Crit, and Amon, because like Amon said, have you seen those videos of two kangaroos fighting in the street?
I've seen it.
I thought you had a phobia of kangaroos.
Oh no.
All my life I feared kangaroos and their power. It was one of those situations.
I'd just be afraid the kangaroo would beat me up. You know?
If it turned on you.
Yeah.
You got to get them when they're little, though.
How bossed up am I to be able to have a kangaroo as a pet and they respect me, though? Like, you know what I'm saying? I look at my kangaroo, like, hey, man, go in the corner. And the kangaroo just hop off in the corner. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, oh, okay, he bossed up.
Right.
Okay, next this or that. All right. We're going to move away from kangaroos and koalas. And this is video games. This or that, The Legend of Zelda or Tetris?
Tetris.
Okay. Ooh, I like the answer. I like a quick answer. Boom.
That's easy.
Indecisive. For me, I got to go Legend of Zelda. That was my first my first RPG that I fell in love with. So Legend of Zelda there.
Yeah, I'm going with that too because I fell in love with Breath of the Wild, the latest game. So I'm going Zelda.
I'm going to go with Tetris, man. I used to play Tetris all the time. It's fun. It gets your brain energized.
Probably was the first game I played on Game Boy, if I'm going to be honest.
I see. That's what like my mom bought me the Game Boy, and we had that and Super Mario. And Tetris was like that competitive thing. Like, oh, I got more points than you real quick. Like,
Yep. I still play both. They have on the Switch. Tetris 99 on there, and then I play Breath of the Wild as well, just as Ben.
Mm. Yep.
Okay. Next this or that, guys. Hunger or boredom? Would you rather be hungry or bored? This is diabolical.
I'm gonna be bored, bro.
Why does this stuff come to your mind, Amon? That's what I want to know.
Because I think about this stuff. I'm sitting there, and I already know my answer. I'm just like him. I'm just like Big. I'd rather be bored because I hate being hungry.
Like it's a lot of thoughts go through your mind when you're hungry. You know what I'm saying? We get angry and mad. Boredom, I can pump fake that. You wouldn't even know I'm bored. You know if I'm hungry though.
Exactly. Same with me. Everybody in my family know when Amon get hungry, when he get irritated, my eyes bug out. My kids and my wife's like, my eyes bug out my head. .. That's in the chat. One of my friends, she's in there. She's seen it. That hungry Hulk. It comes out. I'd rather be bored. I could fake that. I could be bored all day, but don't let me get hungry.
Yeah, I'll go with you guys too. I'd rather be bored than hungry, I guess.
Yeah.
I think you guys make great points. I would also rather be bored because when you get hungry, like you said, you get angry. And they say drink water if you're hungry.
No.
That doesn't work.
No.
That doesn't work.
And I could always just go to sleep if I'm bored.
That would help out of maybe a hungry is going to sleep, maybe for a minute.
That's a rough one.
Yeah, that's hard to fall asleep when you got an empty stomach.
Hey, man, back in the day when I first started, many a nights I tried to get some sleep hungry. It ain't work out. It ain't work out.
I stand corrected. I stand corrected.
All right, next this or that, fellas. The Flash or Supergirl?
So TV shows.
TV shows.
CW.
Oh, we're talking TV shows and the CW specifically. Okay.
Y'all going to be mad at me. First off, I've seen neither.
Okay. Neither That's okay.
Shows, but, I mean, I just have to go with The Flash on GP, though. Because I wanted to be fast growing up, you know, and I wasn't as fast as I thought I would, but I wanted to be fast.
So, yeah.
You know, it is what it is, you know.
I'm going to go Supergirl. I've seen every episode of that series. It's really, really well done.
Oh, I'm going to check it out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How about you,
I'm going to go with The Flash. Yeah. I've been on The Flash hot and heavy. New episodes. I like how they went into the multiverse as well, when the break point, when he basically broke the time barrier and went back in time and all that stuff. I like that stuff.
I'm confused, though. So Superman was so powerful that he was able to fly in reverse and turn the Earth backwards in order to save Lois Lane?
Yes, that did happen.
How is this possible? How is this? I don't like the Earth going in reverse does not change time.
Does not change time. No.
It doesn't do that. Now, a Flash, I can get with breaking the sound barrier and then possibly going into another dimension. But him flying backwards, like, I don't know about that one.
Yeah, you got to ask, what's it, Jeff Johns?
Yeah.
He's the Kaiser creator. Yeah.
Sometimes I think applying logic to comics just doesn't work.
Okay.
We just roll with it.
Yeah, you gotta roll with it. You gotta roll with it.
When the
beautiful part about it, Big, is when you're around other comic book people, mm-hmm. they all agree with you.
Okay, all right,
you're not wrong.
No, you're not.
Okay.
Next, this or that: thin blankets or thick blankets?
Thin blankets.
Yeah, I had this argument with my girlfriend last night because our apartment was like 80 million degrees, that felt like. And she's just wrapped up in this huge, thick cotton blanket. And I'm like, what are you doing? Like, get that away from me.
Yeah, ain't nothing like sweating and sleeping. It's disturbing.
I'm thin blankets all day. I mean, I kick the blankets that we have off now. I'm down to sheets.
See, but you can always then wrap the blanket one more time to make it a little thicker, though. Mm-hmm. With a thick blanket, you can't thin it out. It's just what it is, you know?
I do not like sweating and trying to sleep. That is not fun.
All right, next this or that. Pinky and the Brain or Rocco's Modern Life? What is Rocco's Modern Life, Amon? Am I missing something here?
No.
Rocco's Modern Life?
No, I got
you. Great, like, mid-90s, early 90s cartoon?
Oh, yeah.
Nickelodeon?
Yeah,
it's like lighthearted Ren and Stimpy, basically.
Yep. Okay, all right.
I believe Rocco is a kangaroo.
No.
He's a kangaroo.
You got Kung Fu Circle?
Yeah.
You know?
Rocco.
I would choose Rocco's Modern Life, man.
Oh, Me too.
Amon, you were Rocco's. Definitely thinking about
I got to go. I like both. I like Pinky and the Brain and Rocco's Modern Life, but it was just something about Rocco's Modern Life I liked a little bit better.
All right, Amon, you want to handle the last this or that so I don't screw it up?
All right, the last one is built for you. Big, being that you're in Atlanta now and you've been there for a while and you know some of the dance moves and things like that. And so Bankhead Bounce or A-Town Stomp.
I got to go, dang, that was a
Yes, sir.
Man, I'm going to have to go with A-Town Stomp, man.
Ooh.
Only reason I say that is because when I moved to Atlanta, Young Bloods and that dance was so crazy at the time. And I just remember being in like places like Pool Palace, you know what I'm saying? And like Peacock and these places that were like, they were open mics and then they become club at the end and there's everybody kind of going crazy. And so, yeah, I had to go with A-Town Stomp. No disrespect to anybody, Bankhead Bouncing, Tequila and all that, but
right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, you know, yeah, A-Town Stomp, you know.
Right. What you got, Ben, John? Have y'all even attempted any dances?
No.
What are you talking about?
No, I'm sort of lost in both of these.
You've definitely seen the A-Town Stomp, though, believe it or not.
I know.
Usher was doing
it. It was with Usher and Lil Jon and Ludacris.
And Ludacris.
Yeah.
Usher was doing the dance.
And then Bankhead bounces right here. That's the Bankhead.
Yeah, which is a popular football celebration dance.
Oh, yeah. So well, let me get the whole so you can see, see my arms.
Sound like he scored a touchdown, Amon.
What is happening? What is going on?
Amon, did you ever dance when you scored?
No.
Never.
The one time I decided to dance, okay, in 2005, I tore my quad, right? Missed the whole season. I come back in 06.
Yeah.
We're playing against Miami. In Miami, it is hot as Hades. It's like 110 degrees on the football field down in Miami. I bust out on a 60-70-yard touchdown run. And that was my first big run since my quad got repaired. And so I'm like, all right, I got to do something now. It's been a year, no football. I don't dance, so I'm going to do something. So, Crick, I grew up in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
So, I go to the first thing that pop in my head, Crip walk. So, I'm Crip walking.
Yeah.
Crip walking. And then Donald Driver, one of my teammates, tackles me in mid-dance. I'm like, come on, man. The one time I get to dance, the one time, he going to tackle me.
Because you had just came back, so everybody was happy you had scored. Right. And stuff. Oh, right. Man.
Yo. Yeah. So yeah. I was trying to Crip walk. The double D method.
I was gonna say,
right, so I can ask you this: is there a pressure to do a dance when you score? I mean, obviously, when you score a touchdown, it's like it's just a magnificent thing. There has to be a pressure to do something. You don't want to toss the ball to the referee, like, okay.
It's not a pressure, I say, but it is a pressure if you say you're going to dance because people talk. We talk about it in the locker room. Oh, man, I'm going to do this dance. You see that video? I'm going to do that when I score. Okay. So then the pressure is put on yourself to make sure you do the dance.
You deliver,
and you better do it right. Mm. So the players today, they doing it. Like Odell Beckham, he got it all rehearsed. He got it down. He's doing it. Man, he's hitting it. So you better come out with it right. That's all I say. If you talk about it like on Wednesday, Thursday, oh, man, I'm going to do this dance. Watch when I score against so-and-so, against the Giants. I'm going to do this. I'm going to put Bankhead. I'm going to stanky leg on them, whatever. I was like, all right. You just better do it right. You better not forget. When you come to the sideline, we're going to let you have it if you don't do it.
What happened, bro?
You was about to get down there and get dirty with it. What's up? No, we don't want to hear that. We don't want to. I forgot. No, we don't want to hear that.
Okay, all right. I just wanted to make sure. Cause I would be, there's a lot of pressure. I get in there and be like, I forgot what I need to do, man. Hear the ball go, bro. Thank y'all.
My answer to this whole question, by the way, might have just been, do you remember the Dirty Bird from the Falcons?
The Dirty Bird? Yeah.
Like, who's the running back? Jamal Anderson.
Jamal Anderson.
Yep. All right, there you go. That's this or that, Big Crit.
That's it.
You got some fun?
Yeah, bro. That was great, bro. That was that was funny. I appreciate y'all for this too, bro.
Hey, thanks, Crit.
Thank you.
No doubt,
thank
man. You. Y'all be safe, bro.
Hey, you be safe as well. Talk to you later.
I'm going to jump in here then. So, for almost 35 years, a forgotten sealed copy of the Nintendo video game Super Mario Brothers sat unopened in a desk drawer. Well, it sold at auction this past Friday for $660,000. It was purchased as a Christmas gift back in 1986, and like I mentioned, was untouched until the seller found it earlier this year. How freaking cool is that?
How you forget about a disc?
How do you not open it that day? Like, as a kid, if I got a video game,
right?
Even though I wasn't going to play it in the moment, I unwrapped it and got all the plastic off, so I was ready to go.
Yeah, I wasn't into that. I mean, I did collect things, but I was not aware, like, you got to go and buy multiple copies or, you know, if you want to buy one for yourself and obviously one that you could just store off until later on and where it's worth six figures. When I go to the store, I buy things, I just buy one. I just take one.
This is also just like a totally random thing with happenstance that made it worth $660,000. It was one of the earliest copies of the game to be shrink wrapped instead of having a sticker seal.
Oh,
so I mean, you can't really plan for that, but
right, and that helped it keep its value and keep the freshness, the newness.
Yeah.
So, do you guys remember we had this story where okay. I'm not trying to get too deep in the weeds, but my story revolves around this kind of stuff too. I'm piggybacking off you. I'm continuing the conversation, Ben.
You always go into the weeds, though. You always go into the weeds.
Well, the weeds are fun sometimes. So you grade these video games. You get them in the plexiglass case. And I'm assuming this is $600,000+. I'm assuming it's like this too. But we had a Super Mario Brothers story like last summer, and I think that was like $100,000+. So maybe video games are exploding like sports cards did. You know, you got those perfectly wrapped old games, and somebody looks at it, and you put it into the protective case and everything like that. I don't know. I think, in fact, my story, guys, this week is just that there's new companies now. This is from Wired, where it's kind of like where you can buy stock into these copies of games, right? So if they had, for example, bought what Ben was talking about, they start selling stock of that game, and then you can make money off of that game when they sell it again.
So can you artificially enhance the stock of a game?
How?
Like, how?
Yeah.
Like, for example, you know that somebody has found this desk or they found this Super Mario Brothers classic game unopened. So you buy stock in this game and then you and your buddy go on the market with that game?
Maybe. I don't know. I don't know how it all works. But I just think it's crazy that now video games.
You wanted to get into the weeds, John.
I know.
Now you're in the weeds. Get your way out.
I think the process would be you'd find this thing. You'd be like, oh, my gosh, I wonder if this is worth anything. You'd contact the company that grades it. The company would pay money. You'd have it graded. Now you and your buddy have this game, but how much is it worth? Then you'd probably have to take it to an auction house. And the auction house would be like, I think we can sell this for X amount of money. And then eventually, like, maybe one of these companies that are coming out now would buy the game and then sell stocks in the game. So I think it's a whole process.
My news feed of the week is into the world of Outriders, big game that just dropped from Microsoft, on Xbox and PlayStation, actually. But I think it's a Microsoft exclusive or Microsoft game. So Outriders development group is considering the big expansion packs, but want to avoid game as a service of monetization. So what they're referring to is, you know, not making it a game similar to like Fortnite or Call of Duty where you got to buy the skins. And we talked about that here before, you know, getting those skins, people know, oh, he's a noob because you don't have the newest skin on your character. And you don't look like Master Chief or John Wick on Fortnite because we know Epic has done that. And so the creators, developers at Outriders didn't want to go that route. They do have some patchwork to do with the game, you know, be it the 2019 hit. And we know how 2019 affected all the companies launching games. Games had to get pushed back or games got released that weren't ready, as we know with Cyberpunk. So this company here was like, so it's developer People Can Fly was looking to ways to support Outriders after the launch and is focusing on big expansion packs to avoid the game as service. So they're going to basically give the expansion packs for free. They're free downloads. There's not going to be nothing where you have to buy this. And then there's a big upgrade on PS5 and you don't have to buy it. That's the big thing here. That's where they say they don't want to go into trying to, you know, get the double hit, buy the game, and then you got to pay more as every month goes by, every season goes by in the game itself. The game is just a one-time purchase. Anything that's DLC, anything that's updated, it just come with the purchase of that first initial purchase. And so you don't have to worry about that down the line. So I like that. You know, I like a company that's kind of being, I say, open and honest, saying, you know what, we're not going to follow everybody else. We're not going to follow the other companies to get more bang for our buck. We're going to develop a great game. And I've downloaded it. I was trying to get a chance to play it this morning, but we had to get ready for the podcast. Because remember, we talked about this last year. And it has the similar look. If you're a Gears of War person, which I am, it has that similar look and gameplay to game flow too. It's that Gears of War. So it's an FPS. It's from a first person to a third person shooter. For me, I'm going to look into see what type of online gameplay it is. But I know it's going to have a fantastic campaign about it. And I know the franchise, like I read here on Game Radar, it says from one of the main head developers, he said, we love to make more adventures, more things for the franchise, more things than for the planet. That's Kimeta is one of the lead executives over the game. So we spent a lot of time creating a very deep lore for this game. So it would be more awesome to continue this adventure But this is, of course, up to the players. If they like the game, if they enjoy the game, they want to say it. That doesn't mean we are going to do, we're doing the game as a service, a style of the monetization. So there, right? Not trying to make a whole lot of money, not trying to make the money off the game as other game developers have done when they had big game releases out. So I like, I appreciate that, you know, from the developers of Outriders to do that and just say, hey, we're going to make our money off the launch of the game and go from there. And let everybody else just enjoy the game and not be like, oh man, it's another download that we have to pay for.
Row, row, row your boat gently up the. Excuse me. It's time for What's on Stream.
Yeah, this is WrestleMania week, guys. I'm excited. WWE stuff. Last night was a Hall of Fame induction ceremony. So you saw Hulk Hogan, Scott Hall, Kevin Nash, Six, the original NWO. They went into the Hall of Fame last night. British Bulldog went into the Hall of Fame last night, but they started this last year, and I think a lot of it had to do with COVID and not being able to have fans in the stands, et cetera. But WrestleMania is now two nights long. It's going to be this Saturday and this Sunday night, and this is the first event here really in North America outside of what the Texas Rangers did for opening day of Major League Baseball. They're going to put 45,000 fans inside Raymond James Stadium, where the Super Bowl was just played, actually, back in February. So this is a big, big deal. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to WrestleMania, baby.
Okay, so my What's on Stream, I haven't been streaming a lot recently. I still want to watch Godzilla and is he fighting Kong? King Kong?
I heard horrible. Don't waste your time.
Oh, no. What?
That's what I heard, Amon.
You're joking, right, Ben?
No, social. I saw it all over social media.
No. You must be outside your mind. You better watch King Kong. You better watch King Kong and Godzilla.
Okay.
What is
I do want to watch that still, and I have.
Say what I heard.
I'm gonna listen to Amon. I'm gonna trust Amon. I'll be honest. If I watch it and I'm like, that sucked, I'll tell you it sucked. So I started watching. Listen, I was like, you know what? I better just watch something so I can talk about what's on stream. What? What are you shaking?
You're about to go in the weeds again.
No,
you're about to go in the weeds again.
So I watched a show called Who Killed Sarah. I was like, I'm wondering. I don't know. I want to know who killed Sarah. So I started watching it.
That's Netflix, right?
That's Netflix. And it's a show, though. It's in Spanish. So they have the actor's voice over. So it's all dubbed. So the person's mouth moves and it doesn't match the words. I'm like, oh, well, this is not in English to start. And then that distracts me. I'm not going to lie. When I watch a show in another language and they've got the dubbed vocals over it, I'm like, this isn't working for me. Is that... Why is that funny? Does that bother you guys?
No, he's laughing. I'm just listening. I'm trying to figure out why he's laughing so hard.
I'll tell you why. Because A, he didn't stream anything. So then he's like, oh boy, I better quick stream something. And then he probably picks the worst thing possible to stream because it's in a language he doesn't speak.
Well, no, but it's dubbed over in English. So there's like actors, voice actors.
You guys have known each other for a very long time. Y'all get on each other's nerves.
I'm actually interested in Who Killed Sarah. All right, so I'm going to keep watching despite the fact that the mouth doesn't match the words. It's not in.
Well, next week.
I mean, it's in.
I've seen that before.
Yeah.
You better tell us next week then who killed Sarah.
Who killed Sarah? This guy is out for revenge. He was put in prison and he didn't kill Sarah.
And that's what Big B asks in the chat, John, who killed Sarah? It says, John, who killed Sarah?
I don't know yet. I don't know who killed her.
My What's on Stream is Concrete Cowboy. You can find it on Netflix. It has my man, Idris Elba, who is a fantastic actor, busy actor. He's also in the Nick Suicide Squad. Then we have Caleb McLaughlin, who is one of the stars from Stranger Things. And so Caleb plays Cole, which is Idris' son. And he basically has to go live with his dad because he's not, you know, things are not working out, you know, living with his mom. He's being a hardhead. He's fighting a lot. And mom said, you got to go live with your dad. And so his dad lives in Philadelphia and he actually has a horse ranch in the middle of the city of downtown Philadelphia. And so this movie is basically kind of like a history lesson. So it takes you down the line of I think it's something like Breach Street. Stables, or something like it's. I'm not. The name might be wrong. But I know it's. So it's talking about this Philadelphia community that has horse stables and teaches people how to ride and train horses themselves. They can learn how to ride a horse, how to keep up the horse, you know, clean up their area, clean up and be a cowboy basically, or a cowgirl. And it tells the story of how this is so a fictional mixed in with realism going on. So this is a real place in the city of Philadelphia that is known for their horse racing in the city. But the story of Cole and his dad, Idris Elba and Caleb McLaughlin, are the fictional side of it that kind of intertwines with real fiction, real story going on in that city. So I think it's a fantastic story. I watched it. So my man, Caleb, the actor, the young actors, he's building up his resume of acting. Cause you know, he starts with Stranger Things, three seasons of that. And now he's getting older. And yeah. So he's going into some hard, more emotional range type movies to test him out as an actor, test his acting chops out. And we already know Idris Elba has the chops. He's done a lot of movies, funny, comedy, serious. He's been a superhuman in one of the Fast and the Furious movies. He was he called himself the Black Superman or something like that in there. And now he's a black cowboy. I'm doing it in Concrete Cowboy. So check it out on Netflix. It's been out a while now. Came out actually this month in April, on April 2nd. So check it out. Netflix, Concrete Cowboy. Check it out.
Release the games. It's time for the game releases. Game releases.
Boom. Who wants to start?
I can go too. I got one this week. Star Wars Republic Commando. And John, this is a game that we can play on Switch too.
Oh, for real? Okay.
Ooh.
Yes. Delta Squad are back on Switch. Relive the legendary campaign. Welcome to the Clone Wars. Chaos has erupted throughout the galaxy. As leader of an elite squad of Republic Commandos, your mission is to infiltrate, dominate, and ultimately annihilate the enemy. This came out back on April 6th, which was yesterday, Thursday. So yeah, I'm looking forward to maybe downloading this. I see it's only $14.99 as well, which I think is a pretty decent price.
So what type of game is this? A first-person shooter? What is this?
Also, John, have you gotten 2K yet? We got to play on Switch.
I have last year's 2K.
We all got to do it. I got to get it.
It's only $20, man. Do it.
Oh, for real? Okay.
On Switch. Yeah. We got to do it.
Okay.
Yeah. I can do that.
Oh, he said $20? Oh, yeah.
I can do $20. I'll do $20.
I love it. Yeah, I love it. Oh yeah, but that Old Republic, man, it brings back memories for a lot of gamers. I remember me getting into some of the console release games, but the ones on PC is like
that. Yeah,
it has a big lore, a big following behind
it. I had a friend in high school that would sit home all the time and never want to go out with us because he was playing this Star Wars Republic Commando series on PC, and I'm like, dude, like it blew my mind because I'm still scared of a keyboard, man. I am
scared of a keyboard, man.
I'm not gonna lie. I'm afraid to play a game on a keyboard. I'll flat out say that.
Ah, okay. I like your honesty.
I'll try it out.
Appreciate that.
I'll try it out.
So I'm gonna go into a game that brings. What'd you say, John?
I said I'll try. I'd love to try a game on the PC.
I didn't say I wouldn't try it. I was just nervous and scared about it.
Yeah, it just takes time. It's training your brain to do something a little different, just like learning a new language, basically, but with your fingers. And your wrist and your arms. That's what you got to do. But my game release of the week is an old game, but new. It started with Abe's Odyssey, Oddworld for me back in 1997. I was a junior in college. Me and my brother and my nephew and nieces, we all co-op couched this game. So basically handing the controller back and forth. We'll play it, you know, 10, 30 minutes, or we'll beat a map. Pass the controller. And so Oddworld is back. It's called Oddworld Soulstorm. I've been talking too much right now. Oddworld Soulstorm, said that correctly. So it represents a big visual and a cinematic leap with intelligent new mechanics, twisted new devices, and enabled a highly explosive deviousness. That means a lot of bad things are going on. This is a dark, a palpable that tells an epic tale of a volatile society pushed to its limits. So in the game itself, guys, is basically you're Abe and it's another species from another planet. So you're an alien looking character and you had his mouth at one time, like closed shut. He got two little like ribbons or yarn or leather to close his mouth, but he could still talk a little bit through it. And so now you're trying to save everybody that's working for this dictator that are this boss that owns this factory. And what I watched on the video is you're trying to break people out of this factory. And it's crazy. They're basically getting, hopefully you try to save as many as you can because they're getting killed as you're running out of the facility. So you got to climb, jump, clamber, sprint, shoot, fire, throw bombs, throw grenades to get the other, the species that you are in Abe's Odyssey, which I can't remember. It's been a while since I played it, but it was a fun game. You know, it's a platform action puzzle. That's what I say. So you got to do little things to get off the map, similar to Just Cause or what's another game like Tomb Raider, something like that. If you ever played Tomb Raider, then you'll kind of like this game, or you will like this game because, like I said, it's fun for me. I played this. So it came out yesterday on April 6th, and the publisher is Our World Inhabitants. And so it's a nice, it has a fun storyline. This is like the 12th or the 10th game in the releasing of all these games since 1997. So it's been 24 years this game's been around, and now they're out with their next edition, Our World Soulstorm. Check it out. And it is $49.99 on all platforms, console and, you know, all the consoles and PC. So check it out. I know I will. I want to go down memory lane, see if I can download Abe's Odyssey and finish it. So that's my game release of the week, sir.
Very cool. All right. My game release for the week is Rocket League Season 3. All right. So Season 3 is coming out for Rocket League. Now, here's what I find really interesting, guys. It's also, there's a partnership with NASCAR and Formula One. All right. So
I saw that.
Did you see that? Yeah. I don't know what that means for the game exactly. There's still, a lot of questions about Season 3. I came across like all the different, tier rewards and things of that nature that they're going to be putting out. But, I'm excited because I play Rocket League every weekend and, we're going to get the new season, and you can also, I guess there's a Ford Mustang you can buy as well. I don't know. I might buy that Ford Mustang. I'm just saying when the opportunity arises, but I'm all jacked about Rocket League Season 3.
So you don't know any specifics about this NASCAR partnership?
No, there's not.
You don't.
No. I mean, so it comes out today. So Season 3 comes out actually tonight, I think.
I saw a commercial.
Yeah.
We're playing Saturday, on my Switch.
Yeah.
You guys playing this Saturday night?
Maybe.
Maybe. Maybe.
You guys can't commit to me.
Wow. I mean, I'm playing every Friday and Saturday night, so.
That is the podcast of the day. I want to say thank you for everyone in the Twitch chat. I apologize for the technical difficulties. Thank you, Big B, for helping out. He put in a lot of the all our topics in there. If you look in the Twitch chat, guys, Big B put all our information in there, where the podcast at on Apple Podcasts.
Thank you.
Go rate and review us. So Big B, he's one of my moderators. He is stepping up today, helping us on that side of it.
We got to give Big B a gift here, Amon.
We got to. He stepped up big right now, as he in his name, Big B. He stepped up. So you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at @AG_GamersLounge. You can follow me at Amon Green 30, all one word, on Twitter and Instagram. And in Gamers Lounge, we have our own website. It's AGGAMERS Lounge, LOUNGE.com. Check us out there. But then on, like I said, the Apple Podcast and the iHeartRadio, or wherever you download your podcast, download it, rate it, review us, because that's good. Why is that good, Ben? I know you tell me all the time why that's good, but I always forget. Why is it
not good? Because those ratings and those reviews on Apple Podcasts, that's what advertisers look at. So we get some advertisers on board, we're going to have some money to do some really cool things with this podcast. But we need to get the advertisers. So we need you, the listeners who love what we do every week, to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts.
So thank you for everyone joining in this stream today on twitch.tv, Amon Green TV, and also listening to the podcast that's going to be on Apple Podcasts and wherever you download your podcast. We appreciate it. And we will see you and talk to everyone next week. See you later.